Good afternoon to each of you. Wasn't that a glorious, beautiful song? And I'm not just referring to the lovely composition or, again, referring just to the melodious, harmonious, stirring voices, but there was a beautiful message there, a message that could and should, I hope, strike into every heart here. We who are older and more mature, down to these young children in our midst, there was a message there for us. I would like to reiterate what I thought to be some of the stirring words that must be so meaningful to each one of us. I heard him call, "Come follow me." And I have decided to follow Jesus. There will be no turning back. The world behind me, the cross before. We have decided to follow Jesus. This afternoon I have a vivid picture in my mind of a group of people that have also decided to follow Jesus. 2 days before we left Yucatan, my brother and I had to travel several hundred miles to go from the Caribbean shore to a little village out in the desert shrub and jungle of Yucatan, a little village called Huayllque, the place where the deer drink. They don't drink there anymore because there aren't any deer anymore. The last 10 miles take an hour to get there. So the journey was long, and we arrived late in the afternoon. And Jay and I thought perhaps we would have an opportunity to rest just a little bit. But we no sooner arrived and got ourselves situated than a brother came up and said, "It's time to go eat supper." And we had to leave the place where we'd parked our truck in the street and walk down the street and cross the main road that runs through this little town of Huayllque. And so as we locked up the truck and began to walk down the street, we heard the sound of a truck coming from the south. And with it, singing voices that were louder than the noise of this big truck. And we knew that some of our brothers and sisters from another town, 50 miles to the south, were coming there to celebrate the first anniversary of the dedication of the church there at Huayllque. And as we walked up toward that intersection where this truck was going to pass, we heard another truck coming from the north. And happy voices that overrode the noise of the truck. And here these two large cattle trucks met right there and came up side by side. And they were just filled with joyous people that had come there to serve the Lord, that had come there to give Him thanksgiving and praise. And they lowered the rails out of the back of the truck, and I wish I'd had my camera there, but I'll always have the vivid image of these young people, young mothers carrying their babies, little children, climbing down that tailgate, dressed in their best and whitest clothing. And they got down in the street and they began to embrace and greet one another as true brothers and sisters in the gospel bonds of Jesus Christ. People who had decided they wished to follow Jesus. I'm going to guess that the vast majority of the people that descended down, I couldn't tell you how many there were. I once saw 32 get out of a pickup, and these were 2-ton cattle trucks, so I couldn't tell you how many there were. But as they got down there, as they greeted one another, I was overcome by the youthfulness of the group. Oh, there were the older people, their pastors were there, and there were a few middle-aged people along with them. And climbing down out of the cab of one truck was 80-year-old Fidelia Serralta, who isn't going to let her children or her grandchildren or her great-grandchildren enjoy anything that she can't enjoy either. She was along with them for this occasion. But their age, by and large, their age, I'm thinking of this generation of people this afternoon, from 10 to 30. And I'm happy. I'm happy to see here in this congregation, to see up here singing and praising the Lord, and to see out there with desires to serve the Lord a comparable group of people from this same generation. Years 10 to 30. And they're the ones I'd really like to speak to this evening. And I'd like them to listen, boys. I'd like them to just hang on every word, if they would or could. And if the rest of you want to listen, that's okay too. I listen to myself once in a while and find that I need to make changes and corrections and advancements in my life. A lot of people here in this room, a lot of young people in this age group, 10 to 30, who have made a commitment to follow Jesus. We make that commitment in the waters of baptism. And it's more than a commitment. It's a covenant we make with God in the waters of baptism to follow Jesus. And there isn't any turning back. And once we make that commitment, our lives can never be the same again. There are a lot of other young people in the room tonight who haven't yet made that covenant with the Lord. But they've heard Him call. They've been touched by His Spirit. They've had desires and thoughts. And when the time is right, they too are going to join together with their brothers and sisters in following the Savior. But there are some things, kids, that I want you to understand completely about the words that were sung there that are so vitally important. When it says there will be no turning back, how important that is to understand. Jesus, we read this little text at the beginning of this service, where Jesus said that once you put your hand to the plow, speaking to farmers who understood that, if He were speaking to we city folks, He'd say, once you put your feet in this path, in this road, you can't ever look back at the world again. And you can't look to one side or another side for this philosophy or that philosophy, these ideas or other ideas that present themselves to us from time to time. We have to keep our eye on the road that lies ahead. There's no turning back. One day when Jim and I were driving back from Yucatan, and we got just north of the city of Merida. I'm clear out of Yucatan. The city of Veracruz. And I can't remember. I think Jim was driving, and I was looking at a guidebook that we had. And this guidebook kind of interesting because it tells you all the interesting things along the way and the dangerous spots you might encounter on the road. And as we were crossing over a bridge of a rather beautiful river, I was reading in that guidebook about Cortez. 400 years ago, more or less, Cortez sailed 3 ships up that little river we were just crossing. And he tied them up to trees along the bank of the river, and he disembarked 400 men, about 20 horses and a couple of cannons. And with these 400 men and 20 horses and a few cannons, he was going to conquer a whole new world. And after he had disembarked and after he had unloaded his supplies, he burned the ships. No turning back. And why did he do that? It became very obvious within a few weeks. Within a few weeks, as he began his trip up into the mountains to confront the King Montezuma of the Aztec Empire, he was beset upon by 20,000 warriors. There are no ships to go back to, fellas. We either win and survive or we die right here. And they fought and they won, partly because of the era and the time in which they lived. And the next day, another 20,000 warriors. And next week, 30,000. And then 50,000. But there's nothing to go back to. Now, I'll tell you, as I read that account by one of his lieutenants who kept the records of their conquest of Mexico, my blood was almost curdled at the hardships that they encountered. But there was nowhere else to go. And that isn't true of you young people. Nobody burned your ships and nobody burned your bridges. You have to make that decision every day by yourself. Whether you're going to turn back, whether you're going to quit, whether you're going to get discouraged and give up, whether you're going to lick your wounds and cry and go home, or whether you're going to continue. The conquest of Mexico by 400 men was an unimaginable feat. But I proclaim to you boys and girls, you young men and women, that what the Lord is asking you to do is even harder. Because nobody burned your ships and you can always give up. And so we've got to understand when we make that commitment, as you have made and as others of you are going to make this year, there is no turning back. And when we don't turn back and when we don't despair and when we don't give in to the afflictions and the hardships and the problems and the challenge of life, there's the promise of victory. There's a promise of a new world conquered with the help of our Lord Jesus Christ. The world behind me. Jesus said 2,000 years ago, you can't live in the world and follow Jesus. And yet, the world today is full of Christian people who are all confused about that matter. The world today is filled with people who claim to be Christian people that are still given to vulgar language and speech and dirty jokes and still spend their time watching dirty videos and movies that they have no business being in. Still haven't learned to resist uncommitted sexual activity in relationships. Have given themselves over to tobacco and alcohol and drugs and marijuana. But they go to church on Sunday and they feel like they're Christians. Jesus said, the world's got to be behind you. You can't live in it. You can't walk with one foot on His path, following Him, and the other foot in the world. Now, it's difficult. But that is the challenge that is before each and every one of us. Our attention and our energy and our time has got to be devoted to other things than the world has to offer. The world behind us and the cross before. That's kind of scary. The cross before us. And Jesus never intended to say that He expects all of you people to be crucified. He never said that you had to pick up His cross. What were the words that they sang? That you must each daily pick up your own cross and follow Him. Each one of you may have a cross. And what does that mean? I'd like to give you just a few ideas of what that might mean to you. It might mean turning away from the greatest job that you have always aspired to. But that would be a spiritual detriment to your life. It would take you away and occupy all your time, and there would be nothing left for service to the Lord. That might be the cross that some of you would be asked to bear. The cross that some might be asked to bear would be to say no to some romantic relationship that was really attractive, but you knew deep down in your heart that it would be destructive to your spiritual life and to your service of Jesus Christ. I'd like to tell you of an experience of a young man. He's 25. He's unmarried. Thinking of it now. He speaks three languages, but he's only been through the fifth grade. He's intelligent. And he kind of got it in his head one day. You know, instead of just one of these little country girls that I've grown up with, I'd like to marry a professional person. I'd like to marry an educated professional person that could help me in my service to the Lord. And that's really kind of a difficult accomplishment if you live out in a little village, you know, where there aren't any professional people, including the mayor. But one day, he came across just such a professional person. And she was attracted to him and he to her. And they had a very happy relationship. And then one day he decided, this is the one I want. This is the thing I've been dreaming about. And he proposed to her. And she said, I'm sorry, Placido. But my folks are of another religion, and they'd just kill me if you came over here and said you wanted to marry me. I can't marry you. I don't want you to come and talk to my folks about it, but I'll live with you. I'll move in with you. It's a thing that's so common up here, you know. It's common there. It's common everywhere in the world. And this young man took about 30 seconds to think about that proposition. And he said, no, I'm a servant of the Lord. I can't engage in a relationship like that, even though I thought I loved you. And so he's picking up his cross every day, and he's bearing it daily as he continues to serve the Lord. I'm not saying that I hope you all don't run into such a situation as that, but some of you might. Or you might even think to make such a situation yourself. No, we must pick up our cross, and sometimes that cross is simply to say no. It's not to be crucified upon, but sometimes we have to crucify our own desires and our own wishes, and the thing that looks attractive and beautiful and exciting to us. That's what Jesus meant. Sometimes it's just that picking up your cross daily is just making time in a busy life to serve the Lord. You don't take time. I know a mother that's too busy to just take time. There isn't any time to take. But she makes time to teach little children in the neighborhood. I know a young girl who was taken off to a little village far, far away from any relationship with her church brothers and sisters. She could have easily been depressed, and she could have easily given up. She could have easily said, you know, well, I can't serve God anymore. Here I am in this little village out here. But she didn't. A girl of 15. She went around that little village and she rounded up the kids after they got out of school about noon. And she had Sunday school. And she started a Sunday school of the Church of Christ. And before long, there were baptized members of the church in that little group. a person who is willing, you know, to pick up the cross of love 59, 60 years ago. And these are the words that the Lord said to him, and they're saying that to all of you, to you young people that are thinking about following after Jesus, to you young people that have started on that life of following after Jesus, and to all of us older ones as well. This is what he said. Ye that embark, or begin, ye that embark in the service of God, see that you serve Him with all your heart, mind, strength, and might, that you may stand blameless before God at the last day. There's a similar passage in the Book of Mormon I'd like to read in Jacob in chapter 3. If you have your books and you're following along, we might turn to page 186. And I'd like to read verses 136 to 140. And it came to pass that the Lord of the vineyard sent his servant, and that servant was Jesus Christ. And the servant went and did as the Lord had commanded him, and brought other servants, and those other servants are you. They're you. And they were few. And you're few. And we're not too rich, and we're not at all powerful. But this is speaking of our day, and it is speaking of you. And the Lord of the vineyard said unto them, go to and labor in the vineyard with your mites. That's a strange sounding word. It's an awkward sounding expression. Go to and labor in the vineyard with your mites. Can you imagine? Putting that into a context of our own kind of speech, can you imagine the coach at your junior high and a track meet, and you've fallen behind in a couple of events, and you may lose this. And so the coach says, Holly, get out there and go after those hurdles with all your hearts. And Holly says, I only have one, you know. What's he mean with all my hearts? And what did the Lord mean when he said, go to and labor with your mites, plural? Odd, that odd expression there, you see, is a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing. That's the way Hebrew people used to speak and the way they used to write. And when they wanted to magnify a word, when they wanted to amplify a word, and they wanted to make it so it was three times as big as just the word really signified, they just put an S on the end of it and made it plural. And so when he says, go to and labor with your mites, what he really meant is the same thing the Lord meant when he talked to those young men 160 years ago and said, with all your heart, your might, your mind, and your strength. And when you're reading in the Book of Mormon, young people and older people alike, and you come across these passages that really sound strange to your ears, don't do like I did when I was a young guy reading the Book of Mormon. I thought, boy, those editors sure didn't do a very good job. That was sure funny writing there. Because we didn't write that book. That book was written by Hebrew people 2,500 years ago, and that's the way they wrote. And so when we find these odd expressions, let's rejoice and let's be glad, because they're evidence, you know, that this book is what we have always said that it was, a book written by our spiritual forefathers 2 millennia before. And there was a promise that went along with those people in the latter day, to you people, if you please, to you young people that have said, I want to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. The promise was this. And it came to pass that the servants did go. And our prayer is that you young people will go and labor with their mites. And the Lord of the vineyard labored also with them. That's the promise. You're not laboring by yourself. You're not laboring with just a friend or a wife or a companion or a brother. You're laboring with the Lord of the vineyard. And there's a place over in 1 Nephi in chapter 3 where he says as well of these servants in the latter day who are laboring with their mites, and they were armed with righteousness and with the power of God in great glory. That's your promise. That is your promise. 160 years ago, this month, the Lord said to a young man, not much older than some of you that I'm talking to, doing much good in this generation. Now, of course, that generation is long past. But Oliver did a work. And it's a work that we cherish and value today. And it's a work that has changed the face of the world. And it's a work that's going to change even further the face of the world in the future. The coming forth of the Book of Mormon. But I can assure you, young people, you people from age 30 down to 10 that have made a commitment to follow Jesus, I can assure you there has never in the history of mankind been a generation that has seen the marvelous things that you will behold and be able to have a part in if you're sincere about following Jesus. And I'm not talking about a space flight off to Venus or Mars or the moon. I'm not talking about some new technological breakthrough. I'm not talking about the defeat of cancer in our generation that we hope and pray for. I'm talking about spiritual, miraculous things that are going to take place and change the face of the earth and the peoples thereof in harmony with the prophecies that are going to be fulfilled by people that live in this generation. The gospel will be preached in all the world for a witness. The Indian people will hear, and many will believe and be saved. And they will be raised up out of slavery. Yes, many of them live today in slavery. There are many black people in our culture and society here who have never forgiven us for the slavery that we imposed upon them. But I'm here to tell you, there are multitudes of our brothers in the house of Israel that yet today live in bondage and in slavery, economic and political and spiritual, that live in darkness and ignorance, and they are going to blossom like a rose. You've been called to have a part in that work. Many drastic changes are going to take place here in America. And there's going to be a city built. And it's going to be a marvelous place. A new Jerusalem upon this land. And these things aren't just going to happen. The Lord isn't going to just go zam, you know, and these things are going to take place. You are called to have a part. These people of whom we are speaking, and these things, these events of which we are speaking, you have been called and named. Your generation has been named in this sacred book. You are called to assist in this great work. It's an important time for you young people, and I realize that. You have a million decisions to make in your life. And some of them are very difficult decisions. You know, and the last thing in the world I want to do is stand up here for a few minutes and try to make it sound like they're harder. I would like to be able to help you see that some of them are easier. You have to make decisions that maybe I and people of my generation and your parents never had to make and withstand forces and powers and influences in the world that we didn't even see or recognize. They weren't existent a generation ago. 2,000 years ago, Jesus said, we can't live in the world. and be a Christian. But there's still a lot of confused people doing drugs, cheating on their income tax, lying to their companions, stealing if they can get away with it, looking for a profession which will make them a millionaire by age 40 at whatever cost and whatever price, living in manners that are contrary to the Word of God. There's a woman that comes to our church there in a little town of Copte. And she loves her family. She brings her children with her. But her husband won't come, because he doesn't want to give up his girlfriend. And so he goes to another church. Now we can't live like that and follow Jesus. We've got to make decisions. And you've got to make decisions. These are the kind of people that Jesus said in that great final day, "Depart from me, I never knew you." Oh yes, you were in the church and you prayed. Some of you prayed marvelous prayers and you did wonderful things. But I never knew you, because you were walking in the world and you weren't walking in Jesus Christ. Our goals have got to be different. We've got to make daily choices in life. And you kids have to make a lot of those daily choices. I know. If you go to school, you're confronted all the time with everything this world has to throw at you. And you've got to make choices about it. And just that choice to follow Jesus and be baptized, make a commitment of your life, that doesn't end at all. It keeps right on going day after day after day after day. There was a young man who was baptized last year. And oh, he had a powerful testimony of the power of God working in his life and saving him from spiritual destruction. He was drowning himself in a world of alcohol and drugs and iniquity. His family was being destroyed, torn apart. And the Lord touched his heart and he made a commitment to God. And it was a powerful commitment. And to this day, he's serving the Lord. But every once in a while, you know, he gets burdened down. This year, he got burdened down. He's one of the leaders, spiritual leaders among the young people there in that little community where he lives. And he leads a special prayer group for the benefit of the Church of Christ in all the world. And he gets up every morning, every Sunday morning at 5 o'clock. And meets with a few other young people and their pastor, and they pray over this endeavor to change God's people. And then this year, we laid another task on him. And he just thought, you know, I don't have the time to do it. I don't have the strength to do it. I don't have the energy to do it. I'm tired. I'm discouraged. And he was discouraged and he said, I just can't do it. He went out in the woods one day to cut wood, firewood, with his two little boys. And while he was out there cutting that wood, he stopped to rest. And they were thinking there, you know, and he was thinking to himself, why is it? Why is it, Lord, that I who have made this strong commitment to serve you, I who have been touched and you've used me, why am I so weak and why am I faltering now? And he said to his little boys, let's pray. And they knelt down there in the forest and they began to pray. And he was kneeling there in the forest praying with his two little sons. He felt that he was not alone. And he opened his eyes. Vision, mental image, I can't tell you. But he saw himself in the company of angels, also kneeling and praying with him. And there came over him such a flood of strength and power and energy that he knew he could go on and he could do this added thing that he thought that he couldn't do. Yes, every day we have to keep on making decisions. And every day when we have attained a certain level in life, the Lord asks something else of us. It's just like this going to school business, you know. You learn your multiplication tables. That crazy teacher now wants you to learn division. It never quits, does it? And the Lord's work is like that as well. When you attain one level, you don't just stay there. If you just try to stay there, you're going to fall off. The Lord presents before you another challenge, and that's a part of the decisions that you're going to have to make. You're going to have to make decisions, basic decisions about your profession and your life and your work and who you're going to spend it with and what kind of people you're going to live with and associate with and fellowship with and recreate with. Your profession. I can't think of an important decision. I can't think of any decision much more in this mundane part of our life important than your profession. You young people that are in school today, some of you in college and some of you in high school and some of you in junior high and some in elementary school that have already made a commitment to follow the Lord, I want you to think and I'd like you to pray about your work, your life's work. You know, and I'm not saying, and nor did Jesus ever say, hey, kids, you got to give up all that school and you got to go to a seminary and you got to study to be a preacher. Well, we don't believe that. We don't believe that. The Lord uses farmers and the Lord used tax consultants and the Lord uses lawyers and the Lord uses any kind of people who want to be used and prepare themselves to be used. Donald's going to college. He knows what he wants to be. And he's working at it. Takes some sacrifice on his part. Takes some planning on his part. It's going to take a whole lot of hard work on his part. But I'm saying, boys, girls, it isn't too early if you're in the seventh grade to start thinking about what you want to be. Have you ever thought about that, Jason? Jason's thought about it. What grade are you in? I can't hear. I'm deaf. Eighth grade he's in. And he's thought about what he wants to be. What do you want to be? Pardon? A pilot. So his dad can get free passes. No. No, he wants to be a pilot. Have you thought about what you're going to have to do to get there, Jason? Yeah, he has. He knows he's going to have to excel in some special fields in school. One of them's mathematics. He looked at his report card. He says, gee, I'm not excelling in there too well. So he's counting the cost. And he said, I want to go and get some extra schooling. I want to be tutored. That's what we have to do in life, you know. And if you want to serve the Lord, we've got to do the same kind of thing. It doesn't just happen. We need to be making preparation right now. And I don't mean to be a preacher. I mean to be a servant of the Lord. It doesn't make any difference, you know, what that major goal that you have shall be as long as it's harmonious with being a follower of Jesus. If your major goal is to be a millionaire and retire at age 40, look out. You're heading for some hard times, and they're going to be hard because you may have to lie and cheat and steal to do it. And today the colleges are filled with young men and women who went to Sunday school when they were your age, and now they're in college learning how to use the law. Learning how to bend the law. Learning how to break the law to attain their goals and not get into trouble. But you know, every time you pick up the newspaper, what do you read? You read about some millionaire real estate man. Or you read about some young yuppie lawyer striving to retire at age 40, a millionaire. Or you read about a stockbroker or a tax consultant who's going to spend 5 years in the federal penitentiary. Be careful. Our main goals are really important. Yes, we want to make plans to be something good and valuable, something that will give us joy and meaning and significance to our life. But I believe I can safely tell you what somebody said this morning in their testimony as a truism. You will never be happier. You will never be more satisfied than if you can find in your life time to serve people. To serve people. And so, you know, I'm saying to you kids that are thinking about high school, to you young men and women that are thinking about, or right now you're going to college, and you know what your basic goals are. You know what you want to be for a profession, and you know what you want to be for the Lord. You want to be a follower of Jesus. You've decided to follow Jesus. You've made a covenant with God. You can't turn your back on it if you want to live. I'm saying to you, you know, that you do have time. You have time while you're there in school. You have time to follow that course, that pursuit. And every one of you has electives. Right? Got electives. There are free hours that you can choose what you're going to study. All I'd like you to do is to think about and to pray about, how can I use the free time that I've been given to prepare myself to serve the Lord? Or if you haven't made up a goal yet, what kind of a major goal in life's occupation can I choose that I can serve the Lord? Study a language. Begin with English. Learn how to read and how to write. And when you're thinking about languages, I'd like you to think about this. We're lucky. The most common language in the world. We can go more places in the world and speak English and be understood than any other language. So we're fortunate. And the third in line is Spanish. And I think of one of our major goals, to carry the gospel of Jesus Christ to the Indian peoples of America. And 95% of them speak Spanish. They don't speak Choctaw and Navajo and Cherokee. They speak Spanish. From the borders of the Rio Bravo to the tip of South America, they speak Spanish. And they're crying out to be freed from slavery and ignorance and bondage. And you can help if you want to. Learn music. How to compose and how to write and how to put words to it. We're dying for some good music. We get sick of this music that we hear today on religious stations. They carry false messages or really no message at all. They bring Jesus Christ right down to our level. Learn to write and learn to compose and learn to play. You've got a whole lifetime that you can serve the Lord with certain basic skills that you're smart enough and young enough and have time enough to learn. I wish somebody had broken my arm in trying to make me learn how to type and take shorthand. But I was too smart for that kind of stuff. This is the time to think, what can I do for the Lord right now? And use those free hours and those elective classes and periods to prepare yourself to serve Him. And oh, if some of you wanted to go into agriculture, there's a starving world out there that needs engineers and experts. A starving world that needs help by people who know something about agriculture. Maybe you'd like to go into medicine. Trish told me she wanted to go into medicine. She was going to start schooling in that line. I'll tell you, there isn't anything that breaks your heart more than to be kneeling on a dirt floor trying to comfort some poor soul lying in a hammock who is racked with pain in their whole body, and the doctor told them, you got a bad case of the nerves, and gave them a prescription for some vitamin B. But there are doctors in our land who are heroes. They give up the new Rolls Royce and they spend a month going down and seeking out the poor, impoverished peoples of this world and serve them. There are dentists, there are opticians who serve people. That's what we want to do. Serve people. You know, every day in a little town like Independence, Missouri, there are people flooding into the offices of counselors, psychiatrists, psychoanalysts, psychologists, their pastors, with a common complaint. Doctor, I've made my goals when I was 18 years old, and I've achieved every one of them, and I'm not happy. I'm still miserable. What's wrong? I'm rich. I've got power. Everybody thinks highly of me in the community. I'm a community leader. I've got prestige. I got a beautiful wife. And I'm miserable. What's wrong? And if the doctor really knows anything at all about life, he can tell them what's wrong. We must learn to serve people if we would be happy. If we would find contentment, our job, or our, perhaps not our major occupation, but a major portion of our life, has got to be in service to the needs of people around us. And there will be contentment, and there will be happiness, and there will be joy, and there will be happiness in the home when and if people learn to do these things. I like to read a little note I got while in Mexico this year. A little letter from a sister. Cheered my heart. Brother Don, I have a question. Could you send me some information on the Indians of Arizona, New Mexico, and Yucatan? Especially I'm interested in the Navajo and the Mayans. I feel as if I'm possibly being prepared to work with the Indians in that area. As you know, I'm a food nutrition major. A food nutrition major. I believe God had me change to this major because His people need help. What a wonderful thought that the Lord could help us decide what kind of profession we would prepare ourselves for, or what kind of avocation we could prepare ourselves for. I have another little note here. I've read it to some of you before about a Hollywood actor that had everything in this world that he wanted. Everything he'd set his heart upon. He was at the height of his acting career. He had a weekly salary of $40,000, a Rolls Royce, a 27-room mansion, a beautiful wife and lovely children. But he wasn't happy. He said, if you will excuse his wording, but I find it meaningful. I have nothing. I feel like my life is built upon a hill of goat droppings. I can't imagine anything much worse. And yet he had everything that a lot of you kids may think is pretty high up on the list of things to strive for. No, better we pray early to the Lord. What can I do, Lord, to serve you? Jesus said to us, he said, if any of you will lose your life and your time and your energy in serving other people, you'll find your life. And you'll find contentment and you'll find happiness as well. And you young people, I hope you never forget that a large part of whatever preparation you make to follow Jesus and to serve Him and serve His people has got to be spiritual. You must learn early to pray about every matter of your life, every aspect. You must learn early the importance of living in righteousness, living properly, doing the things that are pleasing to God. And yes, there is another aspect. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, I would like to read a little verse that Paul wrote to a young man. Not unlike yourself, Donald. Not unlike yourself, Kyle, Jeff. Study. Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. I don't even have to ask you to show me how many of you boys and girls, how many of you young people out there have a Bible and a Book of Mormon of your own? Probably almost all of you do. What do you have it for? You have it to take up the Sunday school so your poor old Sunday school teacher can maybe teach you a couple of things that Sunday? Not on your life. You have it so that you can do what Paul said to Timothy. So you can learn to teach somebody else who in turn will teach somebody else who in turn will teach someone else who one day may be one of the greatest leaders that Christ's work has ever seen. I would like to challenge you young boys and girls to pick up a cross, this cross. Use a little of your free time. Some night when you were going to watch some television or go see a crummy movie you shouldn't have been seen at anyway. And stay home, maybe with your friend or maybe with your date, and study the Scripture. I'd like to see you, I didn't say read it, I said study 1 Nephi chapter 3 and chapter 4 and 5 and 7. And 2 Nephi chapter 7 and 11 and 12 and 3 Nephi 5 and 6 and 7. Study them. Study them. Examine every word. Look up the cross references. If there's a word you come across and you don't know what it means and you don't even know how to say it, get out your dictionary and find out what it means and outline it and get it down there in black and white so you can go and review it every once in a while. Study it like you were cramming for a chemistry test. Make a sacrifice of your life and you pick up your cross. That's what we have a Bible and a Book of Mormon for. Not to worry our poor old Sunday school teacher to death, but to learn to be a workman approved of God to carry His Word. I'd like to describe for you a young man, a contemporary of many of you. His name is Felipe de Jesus Uluac. Felipe, that's Philip to us. If you'd rather call him Phil, that's all right. Felipe was born in a little village of Wildcay, impoverished little village of Wildcay. He was a child. He was a child for 5 or 6 years. And then he went to school at 7. And he did all the schooling that is available. He went clear through the 5th grade and he was through by 12. And when he was through at school, there lay nothing ahead of him except work. And so he went to work at the only work available in Wildcay and 100 other villages, chopping henequen. Henequen is a plant created by Satan, I believe, to make life miserable for poor people in Yucatan. Henequen is a cactus plant that has these horrible spines that are so heavy and thick, you know, that you can't bend them out of your way. And out on the end of each one, there's a spine, a dagger about that long. And the crazy people that plant it so that this plant goes and grows right into that one. And Felipe's got to get out there and clear the brush out between them. And when it's time to harvest, cut them off and try to keep from poking his eyes out and stabbing himself and wounding himself mortally or some other way. And that's all that lies ahead of Felipe. And every little bit of money that he earns, he turns over to Mom and Dad to help support the family. When he was 17, he was married. When he was 18, he was a father. When he was 19, he was baptized. He had to move to Merida when he got a little family because he couldn't make enough money. Maybe $5 a week out there cutting henequen to support a wife and a child. He had to move to Merida. And so he moved to Merida, and he lives out in a big lot that belongs to nobody. And he built a little cardboard house. It's cardboard soaked in asphalt so that it's black. It's cold in the winter, and it's boiling hot in the summer. It has a dirt floor. His sweet young wife, Otilia, has to get up early every morning about 4:30 and fix the meal and get her husband off to work. She has to pull water out of a well to wash the clothing and to have everybody take a bath once or maybe twice a day. She has to wash clothing every day and to cook the food and to wash the clothes and to take the bath. She has to hike out into the forest with a machete. And she has to cut a bundle of wood about this big and weighs almost as much as she does and haul it back to the house every day. Now that life sounds to me, you know, kind of drab and bleak, certainly impoverished, certainly with none of the finer things of life that the essentials that we think are so important and necessary. You might think that one would yield to despair. And many do. Many young men turn their life right over to alcohol. And they're drunks for the rest of their life. And some do drugs, just like up here. But not Felipe and Otilia. There's something in their life that makes a difference, and it's the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when you look at them, you don't see any depression, and you don't see any despair. You see radiance. You see teeth with smiles so big you can't measure them. You see glowing, gleaming faces of people that are immeasurably happy. And after their labors every day, on Monday, they have church in their home. And on Friday, they catch a bus and they go over to another place where they have church. And on Saturday at noon, when Felipe gets off work and walks home, they catch a bus loaded with drunken workmen and go out to the little village of Wild Cave from where they came, that they might be able to help their brothers and sisters. Teach Sunday school. She's a Sunday school teacher of the children and he of the adults. Give a service if the pastor wasn't there that day. Serve the Lord. Felipe loves his job. It's the first time in his life he ever had a steady job with a steady income, being a tile setter's helper. But he's planning to give it up this year with your help. And go back out to Wild Cave and try to learn how to be a farmer and make enough just to live out there so he can be there all week to help his brothers and sisters in their spiritual needs. He's 19 and he's going to be the spiritual leader of these people. He's not a child. There is no adolescence in the third world. It's a luxury of our creation. You boys and girls that have free time and have money and jobs and choices to make, oh, how fortunate you are. Oddly enough, you know, this zealous, enthusiastic, religious young man, he's looking to you for help. He doesn't know your name, but he knows you're going to have a college education. He knows you're going to know more when you get out of high school than he ever had the opportunity to learn. He doesn't know anything about history. He doesn't know anything about geography. Consequently, he knows nothing about prophecy. But he knows that you are going to learn those things if you put your mind and your heart to it. And if you would just learn Spanish, he'd beg you to come help him out. To share and impart what you have just inherited by living here in America. The pastors depend upon our young people, our children in Mexico. I'd like to read you a few of the duties of the young people of Mexico. They have their young people's group. And as they began to formulate their group, you know, they made their own list of duties and responsibilities. And there were 10 or 12 of them. I only have 7 listed here. Here's one of them. Can you live with this, kids? In your young people's group, Harvey, can we live with this? Maybe you are. I hope to God you are. Behave yourself well at all meetings. Always be attentive to your leader. Oh, that's a tough one, isn't it, Harvey? Participate in all church activities. You know, I went out to the temple lot local last Wednesday. I didn't have any trouble at all finding a chair. There wasn't one kid sitting in my seat up there. Now, where were you, young people, if you've decided to follow Jesus? Participate in all church activities. Support all church activities. That young man who received counsel of the Lord 160 years ago, one of the things he was told, build up my church. Are you kids building up the church of Christ that you have decided to follow, that you have committed yourself to? I hope to God you are. Build up my church. Support it. Be there. Participate. Take part. Number 4, cultivate the brotherhood and the companionship within the gospel bonds. Listen, I want to read to you, you young folks that are sitting there by your friends, and you look around and they're scattered from one side of the room to the other. Your friends, your companions in this gospel. There is something here in the Book of Mormon that talks about our day. A day you're going to see. I don't know if I'm going to see it, but you're going to see it. You're going to see it. And I hope that you are working right now like these young people to develop a fellowship and a companionship and a trust and a dependence upon one another. Because it says here that the day is going to come when there's only going to be 2 groups of religious peoples in the world. Just 2. One of which you are fellowshipping with right now. And the other is going to be a great power that exists, an ecclesiastical religious power that exists upon the face of the earth. And it says of them, she had dominion over all the earth and among all nations and kindreds and tongues and people. And it came to pass, I beheld that the great mother of abominations did gather together in multitudes upon the face of all the earth among all the nations of the Gentiles. That's us. To fight against the Lamb of God and against the people of God. There's going to come a day when that kid sitting right over there that maybe you're ignoring today, your life may depend upon him. Your efforts and your work, your whole companionship in life is going to depend upon the cultivation today of strong bonds of love and companionship and fellowship and service with the people you see right there next to you and beside you and in front of you and across the room. How important it is. Study the Word of the Lord. Participate in missionary activities. Gain souls for the Lord. There are 17-year-old kids, and there are 15-year-old kids, and there are 13-year-old kids, and there are 19-year-old kids who belong to this group and have taken this vow upon themselves, but there are no adolescents waiting to be ministered to or taught or entertained or whatever. They have decided to follow Jesus and to serve Him. The pastors down there depend upon these young people. In congregations, they depend upon these young people to visit the sick. And if there's somebody in town who is afflicted, the pastor goes and he takes these young people with him, and they bear their testimony, and they play beautiful songs, and they sing, and they offer prayers. The young people of Mexico are the cutting edge of the church. And that's what He's called us all to be. And oddly enough, as I said before, they're looking to you for help. And you can rise to that occasion. If you make it a matter of prayer, if you make yourself prepared, if you look for ways and avenues by which you can serve people right about you, first of all, and then you'll find the doorways opened up for greater service in other areas and other places. And you may make sacrifices, that's true. But you'll never find greater happiness and greater joy than in serving the Lord. May God bless every one of you young people. You're the Church of Christ tomorrow. We want you to begin assuming your responsibilities to be the Church of Christ today. The cutting edge of this church in our society as we endeavor to reach out to the children of men. God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Don. A couple announcements before we close.